This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. You're with Lin Mark, Wang Xiaoning and Julian Ng. It's 7:36 in the morning, Wednesday the 12th of February. And in about half an hour, we're going to be having the breakfast grill where Noelle Lim speaks with David Quammen, author of Spillover, Animal Infections and the Next Human Pandemic.
So the COVID-19 virus has been dominating headlines and causing fears everywhere from schools to stock markets. So how effective have government efforts been at stemming the spread of this illness, and is it possible for scientists and authorities to prevent similar outbreaks in the future? And that's what Noelle is going to talk about with David Quammen.
All right, so be sure to stay tuned for that later on after the 8 o'clock news bulletin. Now, whether or not you managed to catch the Oscars earlier this week, there is a chance that you heard that a South Korean film, Parasite, secured a historic win at the Oscars.
And the Oscar goes to Parasite.
Parasite has 6 Academy Award nominations and is the first film not in the English language to win Best Picture.
So it is, as you heard, the first ever South Korean film to be nominated for an Oscar and the first film not in English to win Best Picture. So how exactly did the South Korean film industry grow to be what it is today? For some insight into this, we have on the line with us Kyung Hyun Kim, Professor of East Asia Studies at the University of California, Irvine. Thank you very much for joining us, Professor. So help us contextualize the growth of Korean cinema. What drove the success of the film industry in South Korea?
Well, I think there are many factors. Thank you again for having me on your show. There were many factors. I believe one of the factors was, obviously the government subsidy that drove the Korean film industry that started during the Kim Dae-jung era, which was, around 2000. This was about 20 years ago. Government tried to pour in some money to the Korean film. And it's very difficult to find a Korean filmmaker at this point who hasn't benefited from the program. But also, I think largely it was the Korean film moviegoers who actually did support Korean films. There were a number of ways in which they got there. They started going to buy tickets for the Korean films over Hollywood films in mass numbers. I mean, this over the last 20 years, if you look at the statistics, you will see that Korean films have consistently performed better than Hollywood films in Korean film industry. So this helped Korean films tremendously over the last two decades. And then there was also a clean internet campaign, which drove away, illegal pirating of Korean films or illegal downloading. This was frowned upon. The users were very much protective of Korean films, and legal downloading is now, a viable way to watch films in Korea. But illegal downloading has, again, been boycotted largely by internet users.
And we see Parasite's stellar performance at the Oscars spurring conversation about South Korea's gaining its soft power. And this has been happening for a long time with the exports of Korean dramas, Korean movies, and as well as K-pop. Why has the Korean policy placed so much importance on this, on the soft power?
Yeah, well, it's important to distinguish K-pop from, I think, Korean cinema. Korean cinema is often regarded as almost anti-Hallyu because it actually, unlike K-drama or K-pop, which try to, again, entertain and try to be non-political as much as possible, Korean cinema has built a reputation that is really gritty and sometimes very tough, especially Parasite. If you look at the film, this has very little overlap between that and K-pop, which again is a lighthearted kind of affair. So, Koreans in many ways have tried to protect and defend Korean film industry to actually pursue these kind of traumatic socially motivated themes and films. And that's one of the reasons why I think you have K-pop on one hand as part of the soft power that, you know, Korea is known for. On the other hand, you got Korean cinema, which is really committed to actually bring socially committed kind of films. Again, Parasite being the prime example of that.
But if we look at it on a broader level, right, how does the South Korean government view film and entertainment industry as actual valuable contributors to the economy, just like it does with the auto and the semiconductor industry?
Right. So, I mean, it does pour money into the entertainment industry. I mean, it has built an infrastructure for it. So there are, you know, millions of dollars being poured in every year, maybe, you know, if not tens of millions of dollars poured into the film industry as well as, the music industry. And they have also built, I think, you know, as I talked about 20 years ago, the campaign began to build the infrastructure for entertainment industry. And one productive outcome of that was, schools. So Korean University of the Arts, for example, have benefited, directly funded by, you know, Korean Ministry of Culture. So those are the schools that actually cultivate, you know, and nourish, I think, young artists who become, obviously, you know, fundamental players in the Korean entertainment industry. However, it's ironic because Bong Joon-ho and the producer who actually spoke at the Academy Awards, Mickey Lee, were blacklisted over the last 10 years, being somebody who is actually seen largely as political dissidents. And only with the Liberal government in power over the last 2-3 years, they've been able to come back and make films in the Korean film industry. So it's ironic because of the benefits and also some of the hurdles that they had to overcome because of the government.
Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Professor Kim. That was Kyung Hyun Kim at the University of California, Irvine, talking to us about the Korean film industry and, by extension, the spread of Korean soft power. And it is very, interesting the fact that the South Korean government has put in place, in fact, 20 years ago, all of these explicit strategies to help grow the arts and the entertainment industry over in Korea. And so the film industry has been one beneficiary of this, and the music and entertainment industry has been another. In fact, Professor Kim used the term Hallyu, which is the Korean pop culture movement, right? So this encompasses things like K-pop bands, and Hallyu was explicitly mentioned in the 2001 economic policies of South Korea, that they were going to be moving towards exporting that product.
Well, it's been very successful, because if we just use one K-pop band as an example, I believe we've seen some articles that say that BTS, which I believe is a very famous boy band, they contribute as much as $4 billion to the Korean economy, just one single group, right? And I do know, I personally also friends who go to Seoul to kind of get involved, I mean, to kind of like be there because they're so into K-drama, they're so into K-pop, they want to see this Seoul for themselves. They're really into it. They travel every year. Mm-hmm. You know, I wonder whether we can do something for our Malaysian film industry,
for example. So unlike me, because if I go to South Korea, I would just go and eat their barbecue, Korean.
Same here. And maybe, I would confess, maybe buy some Korean cosmetics.
But BTS has been extremely popular. And I mean, you know, they have also made it, they've also really entered into the Western entertainment industries and made a name for themselves there.
They have gone mainstream, haven't they, in a way?
I mean, they spoke at the UNGA and were also on Ellen since, because that is, of course, the epitome of making it in Hollywood to appear on the Ellen show. But right now we have some messages for you. And then up next, we'll be speaking with Lawrence Todd, Director of Ideas on Malaysia Inc. Be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.